the skills practiced by sorcerers, those who work magic but carry no staff, wind-bringing, weather-working, finding and binding, and the arts of spellsmiths and spellwrights, tellers, chatters, heal-alls and herbalists. And at night, alone in his sleeping cell, a little ball of werelight burning above the book in place of lamp or candle, he studied the further runes, and the runes of Ea, which are used in the great spells. And all these crafts came easy to him, and it was rumored among the students that this master or that had said that the Gondish lad was the quickest student that had ever been at Roke. And tales grew up concerning the Otak, which was said to be a disguised spirit who whispered wisdom in Ged's ear, and it was even said that the Archmage's raven had hailed Ged at his arrival as Archmage-to-be. And whether or not they believed such stories, and whether or not they liked Ged, most of his companions admired him and were eager to follow him when the rare wild mood came over him, and he joined them to lead their games on the lengthening evenings of spring. But, for the most part, he was all work and pride and temper and held himself apart. And among them all, Vetch being absent, he had no friend and never knew he wanted one. He was 15, very young to learn any of the high arts of wizard or mage, those who carried the staff, but he was so quick to learn all the arts of illusion that the Master Changer, himself a young man, soon began to teach him, apart from the others, and to tell him about the true spells of shaping. He explained how, if a thing is really to be changed into another thing, it must be renamed for as long as the spell lasts. And he told how this affects the names and natures of things surrounding the transformed thing. He spoke of the perils of changing, above all when the wizard transforms his own shape, and thus is liable to be caught in his own spell. And little by little, drawn on by the boy's sureness of understanding, the young master began to do more than merely tell him of these mysteries. He taught him first one and then another of the great spells of change, and he gave him the Book of Shaping to study. And this he did without knowledge of the Archmage, and unwisely. Yet he meant no harm. Ged worked also with the master summoner now, but that master was a stern man, aged and hardened by the deep and somber wizardry he taught. He dealt with no illusion, only true magic, the summoning of such energies as light and heat, and the force that draws the magnet, and those forces men perceive as weight, form, color, sound, real powers drawn from the immense fathomless energies of the universe, which no man's spells or uses could exhaust or unbalance. The weather workers and sea masters calling upon wind and water were crafts already known to his pupils, but it was he who showed them why the true wizard uses such spells only at need, since to summon up such earthly forces is to change the earth of which they are a part. "Rain on Roke may be drought in Oskill," he said, "and a calm in the east reach may be a storm and ruin in the west, unless you know what you are about. As for the calling of real things and living people and the raising up of spirits of the dead and the invocations of the unseen, those spells, which are the height of the summoner's art and the mage's power, those, he scarcely spoke of to them. Once or twice Ged tried to lead him to talk a little of such mysteries, but the master was silent, looking at him long and grimly, till Ged grew uneasy and said no more. Sometimes, indeed, he was uneasy working even such lesser spells as the summoner taught him. There were certain runes on certain pages of the lore book that seemed familiar to him, though he didn't remember in what book he had ever seen them before. There were certain phrases that must be said in spells of summoning that he didn't like to say. They made him think, for an instant, of shadows in a dark room, of a shut door and shadows reaching out to him from the corner by the door. And hastily he put such thoughts or memories aside and went on. These moments of fear and darkness, he said to himself, they were the shadows merely of his ignorance. And the more he learned, the less he'd have to fear, until finally, in his full power as wizard, he need fear nothing in the world, nothing at all. In the second month of that summer, all the school gathered again at the great house to celebrate the moon's night and the long dance, which that year fell together as one festival of two nights, which happened but once in 52 years. All the first night, the shortest night of full moon of the year, flutes played out in the fields, and the narrow streets of Thwill were full of drums and torches, and the sound of singing went out over the moonlit waters of Roke Bay. As the sun rose next morning, the chanters of Roke began to sing the long Deed of Erith Akby, which tells how the white towers of Havnor were built, and of Erith Akby's journeys from the old island Ea, through all the archipelago and the reaches, until at last, in the uttermost west reach, on the edge of the open sea, he met the dragon Orm, and his bones and shattered armor lie among the dragon's bones on the shore of lonely Celador. But his sword set atop the highest tower of Havnor still burns red in the sunset above the inmost sea. And when the chant was finished, the long dance began. Townsfolk and masters and students and farmers, all together, men and women, danced in the warm dust and dusk down all the roads of Roke to the sea beaches, to the beat of drums and drone of pipes and flutes. Straight out into the sea they danced under the moon one night past full, and the music was lost in the breaker's sound. As the east grew light, they came back up the beaches and the roads, the drums silent, and only the flutes playing soft and shrill. So it was done on every island of the archipelago that night. One dance, one music, binding together the sea-divided lands. And when the long dance was over, most people slept the day away and gathered again at evening to eat and drink, and there was a group of young fellows, prentices and sorcerers, who had brought their supper out from the refectory to hold private feast in a courtyard of the great house. Vetch, Jasper, and Ged were there, and six or seven others, and some young lads released briefly from the isolate tower, for this festival had brought even Kurram Karmaruk out. They were all eating and laughing and playing such tricks out of pure frolic as might be the marvel of a king's court. And one boy had lighted the court with 100 stars of werelight, colored like jewels, that swung in a slow, netted procession between them and the real stars. And a pair of boys were playing bowls with balls of green flame and bowling pins that leaped and hopped away as the ball came near. And all the while, Vetch sat cross-legged eating roast chicken up in mid-air. And one of the younger boys tried to pull him down to earth, but Vetch merely drifted up a little higher out of reach and sat calmly smiling on the air. And now and then he tossed away a